Blog Talk Radio.
We have a variety of different sizes of bottles that are available.
Welcome to All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio and 1000mics.com, featuring Ron, winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert with Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is just trying to educate people and let them know, you know, trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly.
We welcome your calls during this one-hour program. Go on air with us by dialing area code 646-727-3235.
Yeah.
That's 646-727-3235. Ask questions about any topic related to wine or voice your comments about the program. Chat with us on 1000mics.com. Just click on All About Wine in the show listing and send your comment in the comment box. Always entertaining and informative, it's All About Wine. And now, please welcome Ron.
Yes.
Thank you. Yes, Ron is here.
The show goes on even when we're not talking.
We had some technical difficulties there for a while.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for 1,000 mics to pick up, and it's not connecting for some reason.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
People enjoy it in Europe too. We get quite a few listeners there.
Yes, we do. Yeah, we do. Well, we are here. It is another Thursday. It's so far is looking good outside here on this end of the Florida Panhandle. Not Panhandle.
Yes, very good. Gorgeous evening.
Yes, it is 7 p.m. on September 23rd, 2010. This is All About Wine. My name is Mike. We have Ron with Florida Estates Winery on the other phone, out on the other line. What happened? Okay.
There we go. Best people. Thank you.
I heard it disconnect. I thought, oh, here we go again.
Here we go. Best people.
Okay. We're having issues with 1,000 mics. I'll keep checking in with that and trying to call it. And tonight, our topic is, strangely enough, Florida.
Florida. Yeah. Yay. Since we are going alphabetically, Florida is next. Not Maryland or something else. Mike got confused once before. So
yes, I did. Colorado is, Connecticut. Connecticut.
Connecticut. You skipped Connecticut. Anyway.
Sorry about that, Connecticut. But
but we did actually someone from Connecticut call, so that was always a good recovery. Yeah.
Okay.
So. We should have someone joining us tonight, too. So pretty soon here we may have Terry McKnight from Strong Tower Vineyards and Winery getting online with us and joining us, and we'll be talking about a lot of different things with him and all that. First, Florida wineries. Florida has lots of wineries. Surprise, surprise, surprise to everyone out there who always comes into the winery at Florida Estates Winery and says, Florida can grow grapes, and my response is always the same to that. If Florida is behind California, and only behind California, the number of fruits and vegetables we grow for this country, then why can't we grow grapes? And we can, and we do. Actually, Florida history goes back a long, long ways. In 1576, I believe it was, 1567, in the late 1500s, a group of French came over the Blue Sea and across the Atlantic, landed in an area which is now Florida, North America, into the area which we now call Fort Lauderdale, and opened up the first winery. They used the native grape that grows here in Florida, the native grape being the muscadine grape, part of a different family, the Vitis Labrusca family. Most people are familiar with the Vitis vinifera family. We've talked about it in previous programs. That's the grape that is most commonly used for wine grapes. That's your Cabernet Sauvignon, your Rieslings, your Chardonnays, Pinot Noirs, Demandels, Sauvignon Blanc, all those. Those are all part of the Vitis vinifera family, or vinifera, however you want to pronounce it. Florida native grape is the Vitis labrusca, or Vitis rotunda. These are characterized by being large grapes, tough skin, a lot of seeds. They basically grow wild in Florida and up the East Coast a little bit. These make for a sweet wine. The muscadine wine tends to always be sweeter style, although you can ferment the sugar out of it and make it a little bit drier. But most of the time, wineries and people just go with the sweet and just let it go ahead and ferment and make a sweet wine. So, again, back in the late 1500s, the French came over, opened up a winery using the native grape, the Muscadine grape. And they did that for about 8, 9, 10, 12 years, something like that, closed the place down and left. So it's we actually predate just, well, everything in the United States as far as winery goes here in our lovely state of Florida. And whenever people say, oh, well, the history of Florida wine, you know, they don't think about it too much, but we've been around for a long time. Wine grapes here in Florida are earlier than anywhere. The first vineyards that were planted were in the 16th century by Spanish missionaries, basically for sacramental wines, for all the Christian religious ceremonies that were held. And, you know, usually they didn't last long because they were planting grapes that they were bringing over from France or bringing over from Germany or places like that. That was the vinifera grape, which doesn't grow well. So they started using native grapes a lot. The reason Florida cannot grow the Vitis vinifera grape is because of a little bug called the glassy winged sharpshooter. This little bug is about the size of a dime in its adult stage, and it carries a disease called Pierce disease. That's P-I-E-R-C-E-S, Pierce disease. Interesting little bug, the glassy winged sharpshooter. If you get an opportunity, do a search engine, look it up, because it's fascinating. The little bug runs this little mouthpiece into the vine and sucks the water out and gets his nutrition from the water that it sucks out. It's like a 150-pound man drinking 40 gallons of water a day. This is how much this bug filters through its body to get the nutrition out. But the problem is when he infects, when he sticks his little mouthpiece into the vine, he infects it with Pierce disease. Nothing can be done once a grapevine's infected with Pierce disease. And most of the time, and I say most of the time because if Terry ends up calling us, we'll discuss where it doesn't always result in the killing the vine. But most of the time, especially in the vinifera variety, it will kill the grapevine. So since the 1930s, University of Florida has been trying to develop hybrid grape varieties that will grow in Florida. Part of the vinifera family, usually French-American hybrids. And they've came out with about a dozen of them, Stover being one, Blanc de Bois being another one, which is really a pretty popular grape, a Swanee, a Miss Blanc, which has fallen out of favor. It was very popular for quite some time, and it's fallen out of favor because it's just not planted that much. A lot of the Florida grapes, too, that have been developed have been used for rootstock to plant others. And because of that, a lot of the names have been lost. And another one is the Tampa grape. Another is the Lake Emerald grape. These are all University of Florida grapes that have been genetic engineered or crossbred or whatever to come up with a vinifera family that will grow in Florida. So we have ourselves a series of grapes that do grow in Florida in the vinifera family. Most wineries in Florida, though, use the Muscadine grape, or they have juice shipped in from out of state, or they may use the Florida grapes. Now, we, Florida State's winery, I say we, and that's me, use the vinifera grape. Use the Florida hybrid grapes. We have some Stover, Blanc de Bois, Swanee planted, some Tampa planted. And these grapes are very light. They don't do real well with red. Even the Muscadine grape, the red grape and the Muscadine grape isn't really as prolific as the white. But we have our grapes that we use are from University of Florida, and they're the vinifera family. The glassy winged sharpshooter, It is a problem, not just in Florida, but in all warm climates. Actually, they're having a problem in Southern California with it. If I remember correctly, I might have mentioned it when we covered our Southern California section. And the grasswing sharpshooter has been a problem. Actually, we have a grapevine planted in the side of the winery out now on the side yard from Puerto Rico. They have done some work on it, and they have developed some grapes that will grow in the warmer climate that are resistant to Pierce disease. And we had originally 10 of them, and I've got one that's still growing. The sad thing is it hasn't gotten any bigger. It's pretty much stayed where it is over the years. It's been there for about 7 years now, and it's pretty much stayed the same size, which does not bode well when you're trying to grow grapes. So Florida itself, for those of you who might be listening, did you get a hold of 1,000 mics there?
No, I keep trying, but
okay. Yeah. For those of you who might be listening out of the country, Florida is in the southeast corner of the country. It is the little finger, little toe, little foot that sticks down on the southeast corner of the country. It is the state was established back in 1845, so it's one of the first states. Winemaking, the years of winemaking date back to the 16th century. I mean, it's phenomenal history of winemaking here. The state of Florida itself is about 65,800 square miles, give or take a few. That's 170,408 kilometers, square kilometers. So it's not a real, real big state. But it has enough weather to give us good grapevines, except for the fact that we are plagued quite a bit with fungus that gets in the grape clusters and all that. That's why a lot of the grapes need to really be trimmed up so you can get a good airflow through the grapes, because without that, you're going to end up getting some serious problems with rot within the grapes. Some of the wineries, excuse me, and we haven't heard from Terry yet, so let me go a little bit further here. Some of the wineries in Florida, Lake Ridge. Lake Ridge is located up in the mid-northern part of central part of the state, just west of Orlando, actually. Lake Ridge is the second oldest winery in the state of Florida. Really one of the biggest. They have been there for quite some time. They do muscadine. They have a following that is unbelievable. People come in and walk out with cases out of the place. They have really quite a following. They present their wines to a lot of different contests and judgings around the country. And because of that, they have themselves a stack of awards. The story behind Lake Ridge, which is sort of an interesting story. The gentleman that owns Lake Ridge Winery, and I've got a blank. I'm sorry right now. I can't think of his name. But the person who owns Lake Ridge Winery, Gary Cox is what it is. Thank you. Gary Cox flew over Central Florida in a helicopter. He got himself a helicopter, flew over Central Florida. Saw the area down just north of Claremont and says, that's where I want to open up my winery. And the rest is to say it's history. He's been making wine there ever since then and doing quite well with it. When he first moved into that area, there was nothing there, orange groves all around. The hills were rolling orange groves and everything around it was orange groves. He has the winery on top of a hill, which with the vineyards rolling away from it, a nice place, muscadine grapes growing, rolling away from it. A nice place. He established 88 actually is when he first was interested in 1989, opened the doors, and has been making wine ever since then. I've been there. A very nice winery. They do a lot of distribution throughout the state. They sell their wine everywhere. They also have a second location in St. Augustine, Florida, which is up in the northeast corner. St. Augustine, the oldest city in this country. If you're ever visiting Florida, be sure to check out St. Augustine and also San Sebastian Winery, which is the sister winery of Lake Ridge Winery. Again, offers the same wines and same stuff, only under a different label. Lake Ridge Winery has a lot of different types of wines. They really quite a variety. They do make a Blanc de Bois, which is the vinifera family of grapes. A Chablis made with a Carlos grape, which is a Muscadine grape. They do a bubbly pink Crescendo, they call it, which is a champagne style. A Cuvée Blanc, again, with Florida hybrid grapes, bunch grapes. Cuvée Noir, which also is light tannin made with bunch grapes. They have their Southern Red and Southern White, which is their classic wines that have just enough sweetness that people fell in love with these wines. They sell these by the ton. It's just unbelievable. A blush wine also is a light, refreshing white Zin style, only tends to be a little bit lighter. It's called Sun Blush. And they have a Stover. Again, this is one of the hybrid grapes that come out of Florida. Excuse me, University of Florida. Very pleasant wine in itself. Lake Ridge Winery, again, located just north of it. When we're talking about wineries in Florida, we do have to talk about the oldest winery in Florida. It's been around for many years, actually 30 this year. They celebrate their 30th birthday. And it's located just east of Fort Myers on Highway 80. And it is Eden Vineyards and Winery. And I know quite a bit about this because this is our sister winery. This is, they are 10 miles due east on 80 in a little town called Alva, a nice little small, quaint little wooded town of Alva. And Alva Diner is just right up the street, and they have some of the best baked chicken that I've ever had in my life. Eden Winery, Eden Vineyards and Winery is located in a little wooded area. They got a vineyard sitting out in front. Property is all fenced in. The owner, Earl Kaiser of Eden Vineyard, his son lives on the premises, who helped for years in the winery. And he has horses and a couple, three cows and stuff on the property that just wander around the property. Some friendly dogs and all that. Just a nice, quaint old winery. Again, 30 years in operation. They offer basically the same wines that we do, only not quite as many. They offer Lake Emerald, which is a Florida hybrid grape, a Rouge or red wine they call Alva Rouge and Alva White, Florida grapes, Carl Bell blend, Eden Spice, which is the same as our Plantation Spice, our sweet wine. And they also have a wine made from star fruit, Carambola, if you're familiar with that name instead. It tastes and smells just like the Carambola or star fruit. It's really fascinating. We actually have a few bottles that are available at our winery if you'd like to purchase it and you're up in that area. Eden Vineyard is open every day of the week, 11 to 4. It is really a nice small winery. That's where we do our fermentation, bottling, corking, caps, and labeling, blending, everything. All the tanks and everything are down there. It is the oldest established, continuously operated winery in Florida. It used to be the furthest southern winery in Florida. For years, it was the furthest southern winery in the United States, I should say, not in Florida. For years, they were noted as the first one. Some of the earlier maps out of Florida would show Eden Vineyard because it was being a further southern one in the country. And now they have been moved to second for the southern, by Snabley Winery. Snabley's Redlands Winery is what this is called. And they are located even further south. They have they're located down in Homestead, which is Homestead is noted for the hurricane that went through a few years ago. If everyone remembers that, they have the furthest southern wine now. They are located, like I say, in Homestead. They do a lot of fruit wines. They've noted a lot for making wines out of all sorts of tropical fruits that are located in that part of the state. For example, they have a and I know I'm going to pronounce this wrong, but a lychee, is it pronounced? A lychee? L-Y-C-H-E-E, that has comparable to a Riesling, a nice light fruit wine. They do a dry and sweet and a regular avocado wine. They do a carambola, also a star fruit wine, a mango, a guava, passion fruit, which I've never had, but it sounds interesting, and a blended wine they call Category 3 Hurricane blended wine. And numerous other fruit wines. So if you're in the area of Homestead or heading to the Keys, be sure to check them out. They are they do a tremendous amount of fruit wines and some really pleasant, nice fruit wines on there. We haven't heard from Terry yet, huh?
No, not yet.
Oh, that's odd. No, Terry, if you're listening or if you have trouble getting through, did we announce the phone numbers? I gave it to him, so he should have it. So
yeah. 646. It's 646-727-3235.
That's it. That's the one I gave him, and he repeated it back to me. So
okay.
We'll see if we can't if he can't connect with us a little bit later. And speaking of fruit wines, we have, whenever we talk about Florida wineries, I really cannot pass up talking about fruit wines without talking about Florida Orange Grove wineries. And Florida Orange Grove wineries, I just flicked on their website here, and they have sound, as you may hear from the background, the seagulls. Florida Orange Grove Winery has been making fruit wines for years. They got there it is.
Whoops.
Well, that's good. That worked well.
Okay. We will we'll go ahead and take the call.
We'll take the call.
Okay. We have from a 352 area code, which I'm assuming.
That's it. Yeah.
Okay. There you go. You are on with us on All About Wine.
Hey, this is Terry. How you all doing?
Hello, Terry. Glad you can join us this evening. We're doing quite well. And yourself?
I'm in the rain, and the vines were calling upon me, and the rain took charge of my life. So I barely made it here. It was a labor of love.
Is it raining up there?
Yeah, it just
it
came
really
down with buckets, cats and dogs.
Wow. Hmm. Well, it's absolutely nothing here. And Mike's not getting any. Mike, Terry, Mike. You two haven't met, but Mike is the one that is program director.
Yeah, I'm just pushing buttons. So it's
that's the program structure.
I need a picture on the monitor just so I know who I'm looking at.
Oh,
if you go, his picture's there, standing in front of an airplane, I think.
Okay.
Is that right?
I think so. That might be, yeah, let's see. I'll take a look. Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Okay. While you are doing that, some questions. I've been talking about different wineries in there. I talked about Pierce disease, told everyone about Pierce disease. I also mentioned, too, that most of the vinifera family grapes are killed by Pierce disease, and I qualified that statement by saying most are killed by Pierce disease, except you only have one that is not dying. You have Norton grape planted.
It's a strange thing. Thomas Jefferson brought...
Are we still there?
Yes.
Hello? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Are you, Are you're there? Good?
Yes.
Good. The Norton plant.
I'm here. Is everyone there?
Yes.
Yes?
Go ahead.
Good. Yes. The Norton, sometimes called.
Yes, we're all here.
Good deal. I think there's a delay of some sort, Ron, and that's where we're getting glitched up. But the Norton plant, sometimes called Cynthia.
Probably, yeah, but you're coming through loud and clear on the line, so there's no problem with that.
Okay, great. There's just a delay. I'll just talk as if nobody's listening to me, which is often. So Pierce's disease is a problem for a lot of vinifera, and for some reason this plant, while it may test positive for Pierce's, it doesn't influence its output. It seems to just meet the demand and lift its immune system to accommodate the Pierce, and it still produces this wonderful grapes, and that's one of the different varieties that we grow here. And that plant is a survivor. Thomas Jefferson brought it over on the boat with him, you know, when he first came over, and then it's survived, which means it's found some way to accommodate. And that's the beauty of that plant. While it's not necessarily grown a lot in Florida, we grow it. I don't know that anybody else is growing it. It is a wonderful grape, and it loves cold weather, and it can handle almost any environment that's thrown at it. And while it may always test positive for Pierce, it doesn't seem to influence its output.
Yeah, and that's, when you first told me that it was testing positive for Pierce disease, but yet that's all it was, it wasn't affecting the plant, I was astonished, because Pierce disease usually, it will destroy any plant, but this one has been surviving and flourishing. It's wonderful. And if I may say so, you've been making some great wine from that grape too. You've been doing an excellent job on those.
Well, free wine always gets positive comments, Ron.
Yeah, they do. You're absolutely right. Well, Norton can be made dry or sweet or any number of styles. I've had sweet Norton, I've had dry Norton, I've had blush Norton, which was sort of semi-sweet. So actually, the grape is really a versatile grape.
Tremendously versatile. And what's exciting about Norton is, while I like it for its own personality, there's a little spice personality that reminds me of cloves. My wife says it's allspice, but there's definitely a little spice tone to it. There's a lot of folks that use it to blend because it does soften harsh edges, but it can also, some of those soft-spoken personality traits that are lost in some wines, the Norton seems to just lift them up a little bit. So it's a great blending wine as well.
It was interesting about the Norton, too. I've been covering the states alphabetically. When I talked to Arkansas, they were telling me the benefits and the praises of their Cynthiana grape. And I chuckled and said, "Don't you mean Norton?" And they go, "If you cross over out of Arkansas, it becomes the Norton. As long as you're in Arkansas, it's still the Cynthiana."
That's right.
That was interesting for them to approach it that way.
Well, there has been, my plants came out of Arkansas. So I purchased.
Oh, did they?
I purchased Cynthiana vines, but when we brought them to Florida, we renamed them to Norton.
Okay, very good. I want to get into a little bit to soil, and since you have your vineyard there and you've been working on it and obviously just ran in out of the rain, let's share with everyone, if you don't mind, a little bit about your soil and what you're facing with the heat and humidity and all that in Florida.
Well, the mindset in Florida needs to be a little different than most other areas. And the reason I say that is most of the Florida soil is not preferred soil. Now, the farther north you go, we're in the Tampa Bay area, but the farther north you go, the soil quality improves progressively. But when folks talk to me about the soil, my response is the mindset needs to be this is just a giant hydroponic. And if you keep that in the back of your thinking, then things become pretty clear. The soil is mostly silica. It's mostly sand and foundation for holding root. And water falls pretty fast. We lose a gallon per hour. We'll fall 1 inch. So, you know, we're losing water quickly. So nutrient quality is minimal. Drainage is maximum. So we fertilize through our irrigation system. So we make sure that we're throwing everything out there that we think the plant needs. And in that respect, it makes life simpler in a lot of respects. If there's a nutrient deficiency, it's my fault, not the earth's, because we know it didn't have anything there to begin with. But it's also a quick fix in the sense that I can throw it out there through the irrigation system, and in 12 hours the plant's picked up the nutrients it's going to need. So I think that's a benefit, even though it's a transition from a lot of different areas. If we're on the West Coast, you know, they're really relying on the soil, or if we're in Washington or even in the north, Finger Lakes region, they're relying on the soil to maintain certain nutrients. Or here, in my mind, it's a giant hydroponic. I'm going to have to throw everything this plant needs through that irrigation system.
And that's how I usually feed most of our grapes, too, through irrigation. Although I do some granules and stuff. It just depends on, you know, what time of year. Speaking of irrigation, I'm going to throw this in here. There is one organic winery in Florida. That is Monticello Vineyards and Winery, and they're located up in the Panhandle, actually east of Tallahassee, which is our state capital. And Monticello Vineyards and Winery use basically ladybug organics is what they call it. They use ladybugs to help control pests and everything else. They do a very minimum amount of fertilization or of outside chemicals and all that. And they are actually an organic winery located in the Red Hills, the bioregion of North Central Florida. A small winery. You don't see them a lot of places. You don't notice them around a lot and all that. But whenever you there is that one, and it is a USDA organic certified winery. And we've talked about organics earlier in the program. So I use chemicals, and obviously Terry does too, and I think almost all of them do a lot of work. Monticello does do the muscadine grapes, which grow much easier in Florida, and which is a lot easier to take care of and all that. But that is the only organic one in Florida. Tell us about your process of take us through. You said I talked to your just a couple of weeks ago.
Ron, you're kind of breaking up on me. I'm not real sure what you just asked me. Something about processing?
Yeah, you're processing harvest and stainless steel or oak?
In fact, we just harvested the last grape. We do four different grapes, and we harvested the last grape about 3 weeks ago. And
what four, if you will?
Pardon me?
What four grapes?
We do an Eisen, which is a muscadine grape, and we do a Carlos, which is a white muscadine. We do Blanc de Bois, and that's a hybrid bunch grape, and we do Norton, and that's a bunch grape as well. We harvested the Eisen probably about the 1st of September, rough numbers. And
wow.
We did, you know, start the processing on that. We try to harvest, get them crushed and into motion within 12 to, you know, the sooner the better. The flavors stay a little more premier if we can get those things in motion faster. And we'll keep a fresher berry content in the wine. We'll keep the complexity of the fruit stronger in the wine. And that's really what we're looking for, is trying to keep it as fresh and honest as possible.
What do you have any oak, or do you do all stainless?
We ferment in oak, or we ferment in stainless, and then once we've finished that process, we'll rack it, which is taking the wine off the yeast cells and the debris and the biomass. We'll rack it to a different tank, and then we will age it on oak. And that's true for about 90% of our wines. All of our wines do have some oaking to it. And we've had to revise procedure a little bit. The biggest problem we've got in Florida relative to aging is heat. So we will not put wine in an oak barrel because then for me to keep a cellar, a cave, cool enough to age that wine in, you know, the expense on that is pretty heavy. So what we do is we'll take the oak and we throw it back into the tank. So we reverse the structure a little bit, but then because we're maturing in stainless, we'll ferment in stainless, we'll transfer out, but then we'll try to go back to stainless. Then I will maintain that room, and we run about 64 or 65 degrees, and we'll let it age on the stainless, on the oak in the stainless tank as long as it needs be, whether it be 6 months or 12 months or 20 months or 24 months. Our Pinot, we age on an average about 20 to 24 months. And that has, so that's a tank with the oak in it, and it's a one-time use, so we don't ever transfer bacteria or biologicals, don't become a factor. It's as if we were using first-year oak barrels every run with each new batch, and that way we can kind of keep the overhead down. Florida has some peculiarities, as you're aware of, and for us, we just found that that's worked the best so far.
Are you using oak, wood, planks, logs, dust, chips? What are you throwing in there?
Actually, we do a little of all of the above, depending on where the phase of processing is. I use a lot of oak powder in the ferment stage. We age usually on a chip. We're currently testing some staves, which is a plank. What we don't know is how one outperforms the other. And the biggest problem I have found in Florida is because of the intense sun, color is always an issue. Color has a tendency to run a little thin. We're doing things consistently to try to bring that color up a little bit. If it's a white wine, that's very simple. We don't worry about it. But on the darker, the reds, you know, we're always looking to try to find some way to keep that color in there, because I'm not sure if it's the UV light or the X-ray or, you know, I'm just not sure. But there's something that has a tendency to make those bonds fragile, and color has a tendency to fall out with time, and we're trying to lock those things in. And that's a, you know, it's a chemical thing. We just got to, you know, figure out how to beat what the sun's beating us on.
I find that one of the problems is the fact that the sun is so strong on the skins that we're not getting that rich color in the skins on some of the grapes, and it's not holding it. If we do get color, it's just not holding it. It's been a problem also. I think we all battle that. That's why you see a lot of Florida wines are so thin.
Thin looking. While the flavor may be very dynamic, and I think Florida is producing some of the best wines in the world right now, and I say that because I'm awfully prejudiced for obvious reasons. But
me too.
But color is an issue, and there's why, you know, things like Norton comes back in, because it's a great blending wine. While I don't blend it, a lot of folks do, because there are Florida wineries. There are southern wineries, whether it's Florida or Arizona or Nevada. A lot of folks blend because we can take a northern grape, which has great color bonds, and blend it into our wine, and that color is going to be strong. And that's not an uncommon practice, and that's why a lot of folks do that, as you're aware of. But I'm trying to figure out, and we've been working on it for quite a few years now. We get, you know, every year stronger and better. We've almost got a handle on it, and I'm still looking for darker. We're you know, and color is just a visual thing. It doesn't influence flavors. Our flavors are strong, but everybody's wanting deeper colors.
I think that makes a big difference, too, yeah.
Well, it really does. I think we have tremendous potentials. We can do a Chianti-style wine, or we can do rosés, or we can do blushes, or we can do deep red tasting wines. And the problem is, historically, something that is like an old Zin, which is a deep red, dark, rich, flavored, and looking wine, while I can give you the same flavors and things, to be a little light in color has a tendency to conflict with preconceived targets. And that's just a conceptual issue. It has nothing to do with the quality of the wine.
Exactly. I agree with that. I mean, that's why you will find a lot of wineries in Florida that don't go for the real heavy, strong, full wines, regardless of what they're doing, because simply it is a battle to try to keep up that. And so they just, you know, are satisfied with the lighter color, and they don't try to make that heavy, rich taste, because people want a heavy, rich taste with a dark wine. And so it's a catch-22, basically, there on that.
Yeah, it really is. I think what's exciting about Florida is we have forced folks to become a little more adventurous. They're
well put.
Well, because we're not growing West Coast grapes. We're not running a course consistent with history in their mind's eye, and we're still making a product which is exciting, which is worthwhile, which is valuable, and we have folks that are at a place where they're preferring our wine over to historic wines, in the sense that they don't want a cab anymore. They want a noble, or they want an Eisen wine, or they want a muscadine wine, or they found something that agrees with them more. But Florida, I think, has forced that issue, because we've been put in this place where certain criteria don't get satisfied consistent with a community, like color.
Exactly. Terry, tell us about your wines. What do you make? Tell us what your list of wines are.
Well, we make, depending on where we are in the year, will dictate what we've got. We do Blanc de Bois, which is a white hybrid bunch grape, and the University of Florida worked on genetically engineering that. That's a cross between two different plants. And they engineered it so it's 100% resistant to Pierce's disease, back to where we started this conversation. And Emilio Dubois brought the original plant from France over, and he was in the Tallahassee area, roughly. And it survived. It grew, and 2, 3, 4 years, it produced some fruit, and then it died due to Pierce's disease. So University of Florida got involved and found out what was going on, and they made some changes. And now that plant, Blanc Dubois, which is a white grape that Emilio Dubois brought over, is resistant to that disease. Now, what's exciting about that is the rest of the country's picked up on this in the last 5 or 10 years. For example, there's no root stock of this plant available basically in the country. I know a couple of vineyards that have a couple hundred plants available, but basically that plant is not available. And the reason is because now they can graft a true Chardonnay onto that on the West Coast, and that Chardonnay is now resistant to Pierce's disease, which is a big deal. Or Seville, or Chenin Blanc. You know, all these plants now have suddenly become resistant to this dreaded disease. So the Blanc is a wonderful grape. I love it because you can work with it in a lot of different directions. I find that once folks taste the Blanc, they have a tendency to never change. They keep looking for it. It's kind of where a lot of Chardonnay drinkers go. And it has a little earth tone to it, a little spice personality, real soft-spoken, very characteristic flavors. And we do 3 different wines. We do Blanc Dubois, which is kind of Chardonnay-esque. We do a reserve, which is not quite as dry, a little more fruity, but not sweet. And we do a semi-sweet, which we call select. And that kind of rivals with a Pease Porter, something in that direction, with a Blanc Dubois personality in there, which I think is just dynamic. I just love it. If it's any consolation, all our white wines are sold out and have been for about 6 months, which is a great problem to have. Wow. However, I'm working to try to fix that. So we'll
if it's raining enough.
If it's raining enough, exactly. And that grape we harvest about 4th of July week. So we just harvested that, you know, a couple months ago. And I checked on it yesterday, checked chemistries and personality profiles and things, and it's coming along fine. You know, it's a nice, nice wine. We do an Eisen, which is a Chianti, which is a semi-dry. That's why I say it's Chianti style. It doesn't have a harsh edge to it, which is something I never preferred in Chiantis. While I may like a little drier wine, I don't want that crisp bite that some Chiantis have in it, and that comes from the Eisen grape. We do a Pinot Noir, which comes from the same grape. The Eisen is part of that Pinot family. So we do a true Pinot Noir, which we age roughly about 24 months, and then we'll bottle it and probably sit on it another 3 to 6 months, depending on how the bottle shocks is accommodated. Sometimes it goes fast, sometimes it goes slow. And that's a little darker, a little more woody. I always tell folks, Christmas Day, lamb chops on the grill, a cigar, Detroit losing, a glass of Pinot, and we're in a happy place. And it's hard to beat those amenities of life. The Norton.
And we're talking Florida here, people. So all you people up north, this is Florida living.
Well, that's exactly right, and we're not fighting the snow either. So that makes life a lot simpler too, you know. So that's fun. The Norton, I love the Norton because of the actual taste of the wine itself. I love that clove spice personality in there. And
as do I. I love the North Grape.
The Norton grape, I agree with Thomas Jefferson. This was voted the premier grape of the world, and I'm sure my dates are all goofy, but it was like in the 1964-65 World's Fair. The wine community, all the countries, voted this grape the premier grape of the world for making wine. Then it kind of got lost. It was just nobody knew it was out there, or they didn't know where it was or whatever. But, you know, 10, 15 years ago, it started lifting its head again, and it's starting to make its place in the wine community again. I think it's ready. Like I said, I think we're the only vineyard in Florida growing it. I know one other winery that is making wine from the Norton grape. They're buying their grapes from Georgia or Alabama or the Carolinas, perhaps. But it's just a wonderful grape, great personalities. In fact, I had some folks in tonight that bought a bunch to take home for arroz con pollo and some spicy herbed chicken things. And I said,
wow.
Man, I'll be there. What time you want me there? About 8 o'clock. I'll be there. And the Norton was what they were going to use. So I thought that was pretty nice. We do a rosé, which is it's a dark rosé, and you've seen a lot of the Spanish or Argentina, South African areas coming in with deep dark rosés, and we make a dark one. It's not light or pinky like a lot of rosés. This is almost like a Chianti. So that richness is there. Little hints of vanilla. You can taste a little oak in it. You taste the berry. You taste the grape. You taste the fruit. That vanilla kind of lifts it a little bit. And that's all from oak. And that, like the rosé, that'll take us roughly about a 12-month run to hit our spot with it, but again, we're purists in the sense that we're only going to add oak to try to age or mature or develop the flavors in that thing, and that's just, you know, I think that's the way the old world folks did it, and I have a lot of respect for what they were doing. We do a Spring Hill Red, which is a light, fruity, soft-spoken wine. Tastes similar to the grape. It's a muscadine-flavored grape. I'm not a great one for muscadine in the sense that sometimes that muscadine personality is just so heavy, it's almost got a bitter tone to it.
I agree with you, yes. I'm not a big fan of muscadine either.
Yeah, but through the processing of through the processing and with different oaks and things, we tone that down a little bit, and I would say, because I don't want to knock that muscadine personality down, there's a lot of folks that are really looking for that. It's maybe 25% there, and it's gentle, it's not heavy, it's not overpowering, and this is a little bit of a, it's not sweet, it tastes very similar to what the grape tastes like on the vine. If you went out and picked a grape off the vine at harvest time and then imagined that in the bottle, that's very similar to what our Spring Hill Red would taste like. And if it's any consolation, I don't have any, Ron, not a single bottle. So, and that's a good problem to have.
That is a good problem, yes.
It is a good problem. We do a couple blueberry wines. We do one that's a semi-sweet. Our little community here, we've got probably 150 acres of blueberry growers, some organic, some not. And we're not certified organic, we're very close to it. We could probably become certified if we wanted to. I don't want to deal with the red tape and all that stuff. But the reason we're running that – pardon me?
I said exactly. Getting the certification for organic is a lot of red tape.
Yeah.
We covered it on one of our programs.
Yeah, and to me it's just not worth it. But the reason we run so close to that edge is I think it just makes better wine. So the flavors are a little stronger and the personalities are better, and we do that because I like the products. And so sometimes it's a little more effort, but I think the wine's better in the bottle. And to date, I've not had a single headache from anybody, which to me verifies we're doing something right. And that's a nice thing. But back to our community, which is called Masaryk Town, we get blueberries from local growers, some organic, some not certified, and some other ones certified. And we do a semi-sweet, and we do a sweet. And these are both great. Now, that's the only wine we make that's not grown here on this property. So, but we grab it from local growers because I know them personally. I know what they've done to it. And we always sell out of that every year. And we do a port, which is called Ruby Red Dessert Wine. We can't call it port because Portugal got really ticked off here a couple years ago and withdrew it. So if you didn't have an old label that was grandfathered in, it's not going to be there anymore. So a ruby red dessert wine, a nice, rich, soft-spoken wine. What's exciting about the ruby red is it's not fortified, which means it's very gentle in your mouth. It's very soft on your tongue. And as you know, most ports are fortified with a sherry or a brandy or a something, and to get that alcohol up there. But because we coax our yeast along, and it is complicated, it's difficult to do that. We do get it up into the higher alcohol range. And because we do it that way, it's very, very gentle and a strong seller. We always sell out. Actually, one of my favorites.
Thank you there.
Yeah, we're here. Go ahead.
Yeah, Ron.
Yeah, he's got disconnected for some reason. I'm trying to get connected back to him. He had some audio issues or something come up on the end.
I'm sorry?
The phone number 357-99-7612.
That's me.
Area code, yes.
Yeah. And again, thank you very much, Terry. Appreciate all the information. Appreciate the phone call in there. I'm sure you and I will be talking to each other later. Again, thanks a lot and good luck. And hang in there. Once you get those wines made again, I'll come up and get a couple of bottles.
Well, do it quick. I mean, they always run out, Ron.
I know you do.
That's good.
I know you do. And thanks for referring the people down to the business.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you very much for.
My pleasure. Have a great night, and I'll talk to you all soon.
Okay.
We'll talk to you later. Thanks a lot again.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay. Yep, that's Strong Tower Vineyard and Winery located at 17810 Forge Drive in Spring Hill, Florida. And again, the number is 352-799-7612. Strong Tower Vineyard. Thank you very much, Terry, for calling.
StrongTowerVineyard.com, too, by the way.
Oh, yeah. That's right. That's right. And over at the Florida States Winery, Ron Bland, we have, coming up this weekend is Wine Fest, 11 a.m. until 4 p.m. Thank you very much, Blog Talk Radio. September 25th, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. is Wine Fest at Florida States Winery, located we got everything, at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Give them a call at 813-996-2113. Also visit on the web at www.floridaestateswines.com. Email corp@flewn.com, FLEWN.com. Ron, you still there?
I'm still here. Thank you very much.
Okay.
One other quick thing. Florida does not have an American viticulture area. We do not have a designated American viticulture area. One of the few states that don't.
Wow.
I want to throw that in.
I didn't know that. That's interesting.
Yeah, we're one of the few that don't.
There's not even a.
Thank you all very much. Again, thank you, Terry, for the phone call. We do appreciate that greatly. A lot of great information, and thanks a lot again.
Yeah, definitely. We have about 32 seconds left.
32 seconds? Again, well then, thank you, Mike. Did you ever get over 1,000 mics?
No, they would not. I even tried it with my cell phone, and it wouldn't connect. It got a busy signal.
Oh, wow. Too bad.
Yeah, it's strange. It normally doesn't happen. But thank you again, Terry, and thank you, Ron, as always. And next week, we will...
Georgia.
Yeah.
Georgia.
All right. Thank you, Blog Talk Radio, and y'all have a good one. We'll see you next week, 7 p.m. on the show, All About Wine. Thanks a lot. Have a good evening.
Thank you.
Thank you.